On today's Caped Wonder Superman podcast, we're talking Motor City Comic Con. We have some exciting new things to finally announce and discuss.
And we're talking Superman 2 with a very special guest. What was it like to fly with Christopher Reeve and how you can meet him in person?
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. It's a bird. It's a plane. No wait, it's Caped Wonder, the podcast.
I love it. Welcome to our 11th Caped Wonder Superman podcast. I am Jay Towers in Detroit, Michigan. As always, my friend and co-host, just don't call him Chief, Jim Bowers, just outside of Las Vegas. Jim, hello to you.
Hello, Jay. Hello, everybody out there. Jay, do you like your coffee black with no sugar, or do you like it with lots of creamer? What do you like?
I make mine black and no sugar.
Right, Chief.
And don't call me Sugar.
Blood is Metropolis.
Right, Chief. Sugar.
Well, I like to not be called Sugar.
Oh, that's right. Do you remember what Jimmy Olsen asked the super copy guy? What he wants?
He wanted tea.
Yeah, he wanted tea with lemon.
That's right.
You know, he should have been arrested for loitering. Can you believe he made $40 a week?
$40 a week. That's right. What a show we have. Boy, you know, we were putting the rundown together of what we were going to discuss today before we talked to our special guest. And as I got to page three, I'm going, holy cow, a lot's happened since we last talked. Let's get into just a couple of things here over the last week or so. First of all, we were texting each other back and forth last week on Sunday, but Sundance Channel did such a great marathon of the Superman films, Superman 1, 2, and 3. It was so exciting just to see those on TV, and they ran such great promos for them.
Oh, yeah, and it came out on April 7th, which is a pretty significant day, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. April 7th was my birthday, and I thought, you know, it was funny because while the Sundance Channel was playing that, they had Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman on another channel, and I said, boy, things are lining up in the universe correctly. Anything Superman and everything Superman was playing on my birthday. Nothing was more exciting, though, than a special gift I got from my morning radio team on WNIC in Detroit, Jim, with the help, of course, of Jim Bowers.
Hey, Jay, I'm not a self-tape kind of a girl, but for you, I'm doing it. I hope I haven't got my thumb over the lens, but whether I have or not, the point of it is I'm sending you happy birthday wishes, much, much love, and I can't wait to see you in May.
It's a special day coming up for a Mr. Jay Towers, and I wanted to wish a very happy birthday to an incredible guy, a super guy, somebody that I'm proud to call my friend. So Jay, happy birthday. I hope it is very special, and maybe you'll go lift a truck. Oh wait, that was me.
Hi Jay Towers, it's Jim Bowers, wishing you a fantastic birthday, my super friend. You're the genuine article.
I couldn't help myself, Jay.
Oh, that video is up on our Caped Wonder Superman podcast Facebook page. What a nice surprise. You know, Jim, I was telling friends about this, but you kind of almost got to pinch yourself when you get something like that, because these are the stars that are part of a film legacy that we loved as children, at least for me. Holy cow, how great is this?
Oh, I know it. I tell my wife that same thing fairly often. You know, I get a text from Sarah, or I'll get a message from Jack, just something random, something nothing to do with Superman, just being friends. And it really is wonderful, because I've always said that they are a great family of people, let alone actors, and who have embraced the fans and embraced us and allowed us to be part of their lives. Isn't that just phenomenal? I never saw that coming, that's for sure.
And boy, and the next day, April 8th, we had to say a happy belated birthday now, of course, to Jack O'Halloran, who celebrated a birthday.
That's right. Jack was turning, or has turned 76 years old, and he is just cooking. He's physically doing really well, and still loves to be at these shows. In fact, I don't think he says no to any show. So we're looking forward to Jack being with us next month at Motor City.
You know, we had a great podcast, our 10th podcast a couple of weeks ago with Pat Miller, the master colorist, and it really opened up a lot of expanded conversations about our 4K talk which we were able to get on our Facebook page. But Brian Coleman, a great friend of ours, now said it would be wonderful if Warner gives us a UHD-BD do-over. It's unfortunate that the release to commemorate the 40th anniversary was clearly not given the time and attention it should have received. Thanks for the insight. Love this stuff. A lot of fans were hoping for just a little bit more there.
Well, they were. And if you haven't listened to podcast episode 10, I encourage you to do so with Pat Miller, who's a retired master colorist with Warner. And we talked at great length about how the 4K, the recent 4K that came out late last year, has not resonated with a lot of fans. So they're reappreciating, if you will, the Blu-ray that Pat Miller did work on in 2011. Fan Jim McCowan, and I hope, Jim, I've pronounced your last name correctly, he said, "It saved me money investing in a 4K player and this disc. My TV is 4K ready, but Warner was not. A giant pity, but the Blu-rays are still great, as is the new Superman soundtrack," which, you know, we've exclaimed about, Jay, over and over. That's a big deal. And I know you're enjoying it in the car as much as I am. The 4K, again, I think the best part of this 4K is the original 70 millimeter six-track audio. And, you know, I was just talking over the past couple of days with a friend of mine, Dan Pulliam. And he seems to be a guy who is very passionate about these movies, knows a lot about the audio, a lot about the video. He's actually doing some video editing for me right now on a couple of surprises that I hope I can tell people about soon. But he and I talked at great length actually yesterday about the 4K and how he's sticking with the Blu-ray. So I do hope that Warner will consider revisiting this movie, putting the original camera negative on the new scanner that they have, which is an 8K scanner, and do it again. And they definitely have our support. I know that, Jay.
That's for sure. One more comment here. Jim, why don't you read that one from our good friend Brian McKernan?
Oh, yeah. Brian has already been a guest on one of our episodes, and he says, "Superb podcast. Motion picture film scanning, transfer, color correction, grading, restoration is an esoteric, highly exacting art and science that can make all the difference in enjoying a motion picture, particularly in the age of 4K HD viewing. We're all in master colorist Pat Miller's debt. I had the pleasure of meeting Pat, thanks to Jim, at the NAB show in 2015 here in Las Vegas." And that was a great meeting. They had a lot to talk about. And the NAB showcases a lot of equipment that these master colorists use at the studios to make these movies look so wonderful.
You know, if you've asked Alexa, play the Caped Wonder Superman podcast, this is the first podcast you're hearing because it always plays the latest episode first. But we do encourage you to go back and listen to our past episodes. There's 10 other ones beyond this one that you'll really enjoy that really cover so much of the film. You know, over 40 years after the original film debuted, the legacy of Christopher Reeve and his portrayal of Superman is still alive and well. And boy, we were excited to learn this. Hallmark honoring the best Superman ever this holiday season. And this is right from the ad from Hallmark. "From Metropolis to your home, the Christmas tree ornament is here to make your holidays more heroic. The dynamic design features Christopher Reeve as Superman preparing to launch into flight as seen in Superman the movie from 1978 and plays a clip of the triumphant John Williams composition Superman theme." Battery operated. Jim, here we go. I mean, here is a version of Superman that we saw over 40 years ago and to this day still is the standard in so many ways.
That's right. You know, a couple of years ago, I'm sure you picked up that giant S-Shield mm-hmm. Hallmark figure that when you press the button, the John Williams theme plays also. And so when I saw this figure, I was so excited. I couldn't believe it, actually. And they got the colors right on the figure, and it looks a lot like Chris. You know, these fans continue to amaze me, Jay, how passionate they are. Delmo Walters Jr., I read on Facebook, he's a big fan of both the Adventures of Superman TV show and the Chris Reeve movies. He actually called Hallmark and said, "Hey, guys, love your Christopher Reeve ornament that you're releasing this Christmas, but I hate to tell you that the S-Shield shape on his chest and his cape just aren't right." And wow. They said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Yes, let me tell you about that and what you can do to correct it." So it's amazing. I think he actually left a message and Hallmark called him back. So maybe Hallmark will even tweak it to be what we know and what we love. So isn't this great? I'm sure we're going to continue to see more stuff come out of the woodwork that these companies want to license and release. But it must sell and must be popular because they keep doing it.
That's right. I want to mention and jump right to Motor City Comic Con happening May 17th through May 19th, Suburban Collection Showplace. There's going to be a lot of great comic guests there. There's going to be a lot of great exhibitors there. Stars like Henry Winkler and George Takei and John Cleese and Meatloaf, Mark Paul Gosselaar from Saved by the Bell, Nev Campbell, Nick Castle, who is the original Michael Myers in Halloween, Doug Jones. But of course, the great excitement for Jim and I and so many Superman fans, Sarah Douglas and Jack O'Halloran will be there. Here are some of the special things we have planned, and we told you this information was coming. First and foremost, the Caped Wonder Superman podcast booth. We will be there, Jim, all 3 days, meeting fans of Superman and just Comic-Con fans in Detroit. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait. We had such a great time last year and met so many people that we'd heard of but never met, and that's what I love about conventions and what we loved about WonderCon back in 2015. And so we're going to have a great looking booth. We got some great graphics, and we've going to have a special guest joining us who we'll tell you more about.
Not to mention Superman 2 at Imagine Theater in Novi, 7:30 on Friday night, May 18th. All of those details will be on the Caped Wonder Superman podcast page and, of course, CapedWonder.com. But we're going to watch the original theatrical release.
That's right. It came out in June of 81 in the United States. And as I'm sure many of you know, the movie actually premiered in other countries first back in 1980, which is why, if you're a collector of Superman movie memorabilia, you'll notice that a lot of Superman 2 items, booklets, photographs, and more have a 1980 copyright on them. So if you ever wondered why it says 80 and not 81, that's the reason. 40 years ago this year, Superman 2, under the direction of Richard Lester, began filming.
If that wasn't exciting enough, on Saturday, Superman 2, The Adventure Continues panel. It'll be hosted by Jim Bowers and myself. We'll moderate. Don't have the time on that yet, but we'll get it to you as soon as we know it. Jack and Sarah will be at that panel. We'll get to talk really in depth about Superman 2, about the promotion of the film, about them going back and finishing the film under a different director. But we'll get into a lot of the positives as well. And Jim, we'll have that special guest we're going to announce shortly.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. And then, you know what? We just found out Jay and I have been approved to also do another panel at Motor City. And this one's supposed to be taking place on Sunday, May 19th. Now, again, you'll need to get on the Motor City Comic-Con website or Facebook page, as well as on the Caped Wonder podcast page, to get confirmation on the day and the time. But we're almost certain it'll be on Sunday. So you'll want to stick around at Motor City for this. And it is going to be called Collecting Movie Props and Autographs. Now, of course, the emphasis will be on the Superman movies, but we want to talk about things in general, Star Wars, anything that the fans collect regarding pop culture stuff, from autographs to props to promotional standees, you name it, we're going to try to cover it. So there will be a lot to cover in that hour, and we hope that fans will participate and share with us some of the stories they have about acquiring these great items.
We've talked about it before, but whether you collect Superman stuff like us or Star Trek stuff, Star Wars stuff, horror movie things, it's all the same when it comes to really doing your homework and making sure what you're buying is the real deal. So we'll get into that and some places that you can get things authenticated as well. So we look forward to that on Sunday. And as we get a little closer, we'll continue to dive into some of the things that we'll be doing at Motor City Comic Con. All right, that said, let me play you this.
Hey, Mom, look!
Uh-huh. Yeah, honey, that's nice.
Now, fans of Superman 2 should know that voice.
Actor Hadley Kay in Niagara Falls. Of course, we know that Hadley was saved by Christopher Reeve when he fell off the side of the falls or the railing by his mom and dad. And he is our special guest today here on Episode 11. Welcome, Hadley.
Hey, Mom, look. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Wonderful. You?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thank you.
So, Hadley, let's talk a little bit here. We've got so many questions for you. I know Jim has known you for many years, and you realize, and I'm sure you know this, you're in this iconic scene of this iconic movie, this sequel. Take us back. First of all, how did you get involved? How did they find you? How did you find them?
Yeah, to me, it was just another job. I'd actually been, I didn't realize the enormity of this project. I was still a kid, so it hadn't really hit home for me what I was about to become a part of. I'd already been an actor since I was about 6 years old. So I'd done lots of TV shows and movies and commercials. So I just walked in and there wasn't much to say. There was only a few lines, which I seem to have passed on that level. And then the director asked me, Hadley, why should we pick you over other kids? And that's what I remember most from the audition, actually. I don't remember the lines at all. And because my parents are from there and my two brothers as well, they're from England. I said, well, I just want to go to England and meet the rest of my family. And I don't know. I think maybe that endeared me to them somehow. And the rest is history, as they say.
And how old were you?
I was 10. If I'm not mistaken, thinking back, I was 10.
10 playing a six-year-old.
Exactly. And the beauty with me was I barely grew until I was about 13. I just was a tiny little thing. So I would often get cast to play little, you know, like six-year-olds because I could still remember all my lines and look like I was six. It worked to my advantage for sure.
I watched it a couple of times again yesterday. And, you know, when you actually fall off of the edge and then they show you spiraling down at great depths down Niagara Falls, of course, yeah. I'm always thinking, how did they achieve that? And I know you told me you had the opportunity, of course, to film not only in Niagara, but you had to go to Pinewood because you had to do quite a bit of flying, mainly
right.
Front projection flying and front projection falling, which not too many people got to do, with Chris Reeves. Can you tell us a little more? I know in September of 79, you went to Niagara Falls and shot this. And this was actually one of the first scenes that Richard Lester filmed for his Superman 2. Tell us, did you go to Pinewood after you did Niagara Falls?
Yes. So we did. We shot for 1 week in Niagara, like you said, in September. I think it was in October or November we ended up at Pinewood in England. So I was there for about 3 weeks filming the blue screen, which preceded green screen filming that most people are familiar with today. Mm. So we were suspended up against a huge screen. I want to say it was probably 100-foot screen, at least twice the size of a normal movie theater screen. And they rear projected Niagara Falls behind us. And then we were controlled by these motorized arms, basically, and we could move freely in front of the backdrop of Niagara.
So, well, when you're falling, for instance, you're actually connected to an apparatus or a pole, if you will, that was coming out of the screen that was hidden behind you.
Exactly.
Right, and then they strap you onto that apparatus, and they can, through the use of zoom lenses and synchronization, they can make it appear as though you're moving through the frame.
Exactly, yeah. Imagine having a pole stuck right through your back, basically. But we were attached by harness to that pole, and then it could freely rotate us and move us up, down, diagonal. It was less uncomfortable for me. It was uncomfortable, actually, and we were up there sometimes for several hours a day. And this was why Chris was such a great person to work with, because he was more concerned about me than he was about himself. And he always said, okay, Hadley needs a break, come on. And they had like these skyjacks that would kind of wheel over and unstrap us because we were so high up in the air. So it was quite an interesting process.
Had you seen the movie, the first Superman, before you were cast?
No, I hadn't actually. I hadn't seen it until after I saw our Superman, after the premiere.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I know. It's like I said, I had no idea. I mean, I knew who Superman was, obviously, watching cartoons growing up, but I was still young when the first one came out, and yeah, it was an eye-opener.
Because I've seen a lot of behind-the-scenes pictures from that shooting, and there were a ton of people there, and Chris signing autographs for people, and I don't know if you remember all the crowds that were there while you were filming.
I do. There was a lot of people there, and a lot of them were just onlookers. I don't know what the crowd control was like then compared to filming today, where it's super guarded, but I do remember large crowds, and my dad was traditionally my chaperone whenever I was filming, so he was always within view for me, and usually talking to Margot Kidder on the side, because they were like always gabbing with each other, and It was pretty neat to be a part of.
Talk about that railing scene, because I think what a lot of people don't realize is it was shot in a way that looks like you're right over water. But I know when people go and visit Niagara Falls, I think the area you were holding on and let go, there's actually some grass below you.
There is, yeah. And there was enough of an embankment there where they could build a platform. And the platform was about 6 feet below. So if you were looking straight at the bars towards the falls, about 6 feet below, they built a platform, maybe the size of, say, two king-size beds. And I literally let go of those bars and fell on my back into these giant mattresses, flanked by several men on cranes to make sure that if I bounced, which I didn't, it totally absorbed me. But I was well taken care of, put it that way. My dad still, to this day, though, can't get over watching me fall over Niagara Falls several times.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, he says he's still traumatized from actually seeing me let go. Once in a while, I have a little fun with him at the mall, you know, looking from the second floor. Hey, Dad, look.
That's great.
Hey, there's some behind-the-scenes pictures out there, Hadley, that surfaced a few years ago by a fan who sent me those. Oh, yeah. And I think you've seen them. Among those shows, one of the stunt guys testing out Christopher Reeve's wire flying harness. Of course, they had to bring a crane in there for the landing of you and Christopher Reeve. Do you recall much about that landing and how many takes you did? And if you were on your own set of wires, because I know sometimes Chris had to hold the actor and the actor didn't have wires as well.
That's right. And I don't believe, I think there for some I was and for some I wasn't. Like on close-ups, he just had me free in his arms. And I don't believe we did it too many times, maybe 8 to 10 times, because I guess we were coming in from about maybe 20 feet up. But yeah, I think it was a combination of both with the wires. Wires were a big part of filming for me. Yeah. So I want to say yes, I was always in a harness, but I don't think I was for the close-ups. So maybe for the last, 5 or 6 feet, let's say, we were free falling.
By then, too, Chris had really perfected the flying, and he actually did a one-toe touchdown, which is
he really
wanted the guys to work with him on coming up with better and more convincing methods of doing the landings and takeoffs. And I did watch that scene again yesterday, and it's amazing how the flying evolved over time with these movies. And by Superman 3, it was just, perfected to the max. But that long shot of you and Chris flying away from the boat, the tour boat that's in Niagara Falls in the background, that's just a phenomenal shot to me. And even though it's a very quick rescue, and you talked about, I think, how much footage you shot versus how much ended up in the movie, but Almost every technique was used in that scene. You had front projection, you had blue screen, you had wire flying, and there was even a dummy of Christopher Reeve and you flown and suspended for just a few seconds in that scene.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't know who joked that there's probably still a cast of me spinning around at the bottom of Niagara Falls. Because I know they threw several casts of me, full body casts of me, over the side. And I say that because I remember making those casts, was kind of a scary process for me. I was only about, 60 pounds at the time. And I had the heavy plaster being made, over top of my little chest. So they kind of stuck a straw in my mouth and said, just put your arm up. If you need us to break you out, Hadley, we'll get you out of here. I was mildly freaking out while they were making these casts, but
yeah, that was probably Stuart Freeborn who did that for you. He did Christopher Reeve's makeup and the makeup of the other actors, but he actually made molds of you and made molds of the three villains and Margot Kidder for the flying of Chris, of course.
Right.
And I've got one behind the scenes picture of Margot being encased in in plaster.
Yeah.
And Stuart Freeborn has this big grin on his face like, yeah, I got you right where I want you, Margot.
Yeah, it's pretty scary under there. I don't know if, I guess not many people have been through that process, but that plaster is wet and heavy. If you're claustrophobic, do not apply.
Tell us about you seeing the final film. Like, you know, where did you see the film when you actually got to see it and, you know, completed with your scene in it? Were you shown it ahead of time or did you see it like everyone else?
I saw it at everyone else at the Canadian premiere. I still have the movie card that they handed out to me. It was actually at a place in Toronto called the Ontario Science Center, which is not really known for its film screenings, but I have no idea why they did it there, but it was a great experience. I think I was in awe as much as anyone sitting in the audience because I didn't see the final product until then.
Right.
And that was the moment when I realized what a special thing I was a part of. And of course I was still a little kid. So, you know, I had all these fantasies. Once I saw that, I thought, oh great, maybe soon they'll cast me as Superman, you know, like things that totally didn't make sense. But as a kid, it made a lot of sense. You know, it was a natural progression. First he saves me, then I become Superman later.
Right.
I don't know if Aaron Smolinski had the same thoughts because he actually played him. And we probably fantasized about maybe we'll get a shot to play Superman one day, you know.
The kid that played Ricky in Superman 3 also got to fly, as you did, both
right
on location on Wires. And, mm-hmm, of course, he went to Pinewood and did the same thing you did. So I'm sure he was just thrilled with it. So he got to do both. And we hope to get him on a podcast in the future. Do you remember at all when you were at Pinewood walking around? Could you just walk around freely and visit the other sets?
Yes, and I did. And actually, that's the two vivid memories I have of Pinewood are, A, it was the dampest place I'd ever been to indoors. It was, I don't know if that was just a byproduct of shooting in the countryside in London, England, but it was very damp. And the other thing is I walked onto the set and I saw this half car that looked so familiar to me and I recognized it from James Bond. Hmm. It was the underwater car from James Bond.
Ah, right. The White Lotus that could go underwater. Right. In The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yes. So I saw that and it was just discarded wooden junk. Like it wasn't the car you think it is. It was literally just a wooden model of the car and it was cut in half. I remember that. And I also remember seeing a miniature city and these cameras literally moving through this miniature city. And I remember it years later as being part of the Indiana Jones series. I don't know if it was at Pinewood or not.
Were there rules in the sense that while you were there, you weren't allowed to either talk about things that you saw or take pictures of things? Were you allowed to, you know, pose and take pictures of different things like that?
Growing up, this podcast would not have been possible because, well, A, there were no podcasts, but also because I signed a non-disclosure agreement. And I took that very seriously right into my teens. I was still, you know, people would say, so how was it done? And I guess I was such a professional from such a young age. I'd always say, I'm sorry, I can't discuss it.
Right.
And I wouldn't.
Right.
Until I think I realized, okay, it's probably safe now that I'm 20, you know. But I never discussed how we did it. I would just admit that I fell off Niagara Falls. That's it.
Right.
Which was true. There is a wonderful picture of me and Chris, which is unfortunately blurry. And originally it was me on his shoulders. He put me up there and told my mom to take a picture. Quickly someone ran over and said, Chris, please put on your robe. We can't have you in costume for a private photo.
Hmm.
They said, sorry, you know, so unfortunately, you would think there'd be, you know, I have like 8,000 pictures on my iPhone. But pictures seem to be scarce for some reason, possibly because they were protecting the product back then.
Sure.
Well, I would agree with you, Hadley, because if you, Jay, and I'm sure you remember this, back in 1980 when they did, when they released the documentary, The Making of Superman, the movie, if you watch that, there's not a single scene of the cranes that flew Chris.
Right.
There was no scenes of Chris up on that pole that we talked about, Hadley, in front of the screen.
Right.
That was purposely omitted, and that's also why there are no photos in the David Michael Petru making of paperback.
Well, it's like any magician protecting their tricks, right?
Right.
I mean, why would you want to just for the audience sake, give away the magic. You know, that's what makes it so special for people.
Hence, "You'll Believe a Man Can Fly," the slogan exactly. for the first movie.
Yeah.
But that's a great photo, Hadley. You were kind enough to send it to me a few years ago, and I did my best to restore it.
You did a great job. I think you made it better than the original somehow.
But, well, thank you. It's on CapeWonder.com. I believe it's still up there. If not, we'll make sure we get it up there again and on the podcast Facebook page, because it is really a great photograph. And there's Chris with that big grin that he was so well known for, you know, just enjoying himself. And by Superman 2, I know he was even more comfortable with the whole process because he knew what to expect coming back. But closely guarded, and that's what I love about films from a few years ago. As you guys can imagine, they didn't show you everything. They didn't tell you everything. Trailers, for instance, like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Jaws, didn't show you the ships and the
that's
sharks.
Right.
So
when a star came on to a talk show, let's say, you know, the Tonight Show, it was a big deal. It was an event, you know, because we didn't see, you know, these stars in their private lives or what they were eating for breakfast. You know, now we see everything. So it was a really special thing when you got a chance to see these people speak, you know, like you and I, like real human beings.
Yeah.
Hadley, did you get to meet any of the other actors in Superman 2 in addition to Chris Reeve and Margot Kidder? Do you remember that at Pinewood?
It's possible I did. I wouldn't have known who they are because I was
okay.
But Margot, for sure, I remember because we did a lot together. But no, just Chris and Margot, actually.
Well, I was hoping that you had an opportunity to sneak into the Fortress interior set, which Jay and I rank as our favorite movie set of all time.
I when I watch the movie, I also have those thoughts of, why didn't I get to see that? I was right there. Oh, you know, why didn't they give me a tour of, you know, all the things I missed? So, it's a little frustrating sometimes, but that would have been pretty cool.
Talk a little bit about your career. Obviously, after Superman 2, you mentioned that you know, before that, you were a young actor. You continued to act and you're a great voiceover talent. Tell us a little bit about your career.
Yeah, I continued to do, you know, mostly local, but TV and film here in Canada. A couple blockbusters, like I was in Meatballs with Bill Murray, and of course Superman. And I also starred in an early HBO film called Tucker and the Horse Thief when they were just starting out in the 80s. What seemed to be my niche was doing voices in cartoons and commercials. So I starred in the first two Care Bear movies as a boy named Nicholas in the first one, who ended up becoming possessed by an evil spirit and later became known as Darkheart, which I played into the second film. They were actually two different characters, but it was considered a carryover, you know, from the first film. I went on to do other cartoons, you know, like Inspector Gadget and Beetlejuice and Garbage Pail Kids and Ewoks and Droids. I have a long list of cartoons. Of course, I played the Honey Nut Cheerios bee for about 15 years.
Honey Nut Cheerios.
Now the bee just kind of flies around and smiles. He doesn't actually talk in the commercials lately.
Wow, it's a honey of an O and a honey of a payoff.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
Sure is.
Eventually, I moved to Los Angeles, and I landed quite a role there, who you may know as Scooby-Doo. This one's weird because, after the original actor, Don Messick, passed away, and he played Scooby for about 40 years, I somehow managed to audition my way through all of Hollywood and land the part of Scooby. So I was the second person to voice Scooby-Doo. The only thing is there was no cartoon series, no straight-to-video movies being done. They just kind of needed Scooby for, let's say, TV commercials or video games or kids' toys. So I call it my auxiliary Scooby moment, handpicked by William Hanna from Hanna-Barbera. Wow. But unfortunately, I didn't get to do all the awesome stuff that eventually came when Warner Brothers bought out the rights from Hanna-Barbera. So I didn't end up getting to do the movies, unfortunately, but still something I'm very proud of.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Hey, Hadley, a couple days ago, I posted a picture of you and Chris Reeve at Niagara Falls, and a fan wrote, "Superman saving Darkheart. Who knew?"
I'm guessing that was a Care Bears fan. Who's still following me. God bless him.
Well, we want to mention that Hadley is going to join us at Motor City Comic Con this year. We're really excited about that. He's going to be a special guest of the Caped Wonder Superman podcast, a Superman 2 panel with Sarah Douglas and Jack O'Halloran. Hadley will be up there as well with us. We're going to show some great pictures and kind of talk about your time doing the movie to the live audience. But we're really looking forward to it. And you haven't really, I don't think you've done a whole lot of shows. Have you done that yet?
Not a lot, no. I tend to shy away from the shows, actually, unless I'm doing something significant at the time. I have been to a couple fan expos here in Toronto, and I loved it. I really did. The fans are amazing. And I just have a great time as a fan of other works myself. So I get to walk around and enjoy, you know, talking to other performers and the fans and what have you. So looking forward to it big time. And also, I used to play hockey in Michigan. So I get to go back to Michigan to, you know, relive my old hockey days. So I used to play in my youth.
Wait, you're trying to tell me that you're Canadian and you played hockey and have been to Michigan?
I know, it's crazy.
That makes you the third Superman actor who plays hockey, Hadley, because you know Aaron Smolinski is big-time hockey player.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And he attends a lot of hockey games as well, and some fans may not realize that Christopher Reeve was also a hockey player.
You know, I didn't even know that.
He gave it up pretty early because he just thought it was so brutal of a sport. And, you know, he was so into so many types of different sports, from tennis to hockey to you name it. He tried it all, and he said, yeah, it was scary, so he quit.
Yeah, I don't blame him. It is pretty scary. It's a beautiful game, but it is a dangerous one at times too.
Yeah, you've probably seen footage of Chris Reeve watching his son Will Reeve play hockey when Will was a kid, and I'm not sure if Will still plays. In fact, yesterday a fan, Graham Miles, sent me a photo of him and Will Reeve together. Will just happened to be at the Star Wars celebration. Graham couldn't believe it. There was Will Reeve. So that said, Hadley, we are really looking forward to you joining us at the Caped Wonder Superman podcast table at Motor City Comic Con, where I know you're really going to have fun meeting and greeting with the fans who are, as you talked about earlier, a wonderful bunch of folks. So can't wait for that. It's only a month away. And
We really look forward to seeing you.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me. And it'll be great to see you soon.
Thank you so much, Hadley. We're just about wrapped up here with our 11th Caped Wonder Superman podcast. Before we go, a couple of production notes. Jim Bowers from 1977 and 1978. What was happening with filming of the movie back in this time?
Well, April 77, as you can imagine, was a extremely busy month for Richard Donner and the cast and crew, because 28 March, they began principal photography. In April, they were filming the Jor-El's laboratory scenes. And, of course, the Krypton council chamber scenes and the trial of the villains. And so that, you know, that was really starting to take off. Brando was there. He was only there a couple of weeks, and he gave Donner just some amazing performances, including spending a lot of time draped in black velvet and in front of blue screen doing the floating head scenes, if you will, when Superman is in the fortress for Superman 2, the Donner cut version, of course, the journey that Clark Kent takes when he gets into the Fortress of Solitude. And it's interesting, Jay, that on 13 April 1977, Christopher Reeve and Marlon Brando did their only scene together, where they were physically together, and that was a blue screen shot, where you remember in the Donner cut, the image of Jor-El suddenly appears in the Fortress of Solitude, and he walks up to Chris, a beaten-up Chris, after he'd been beaten by the bully in the diner, puts his hand on his shoulder and rejuvenates him, or brings his powers back, so he could become Superman again and fight the villains. So that was interesting that for so many years we never got to see the footage of Brando and Chris together in the flesh.
Wow.
So that's a pretty significant piece of production history. One little thing I want the fans to take a close look at the next time you watch the Jor-El's laboratory scene. Some interesting news came out a couple of years ago, and I know Superman homepage highlighted this, and I also got an email from a guy named Nicholas Breton, or Breton, B-R-E-T-O-N, and he said, Jim, I am actually one of the babies who played Kal-El in Superman. And I said, you are? He goes, yes. If you look at this photo that I'm attaching, here's my mom holding me. And I've studied the footage, and I've looked at the photograph of Nicholas, and I have come to the conclusion that the very first shot we ever see of Lara holding the baby when she walks up to the camera and says to Jor-El, have you finished? That's actually Nicholas. That's not Lee Quigley,
wow,
who was the, quote, hero baby in the movie.
Have you finished?
Nearly.
You know, back in those days, not everybody was credited in these films, whether they were an actor or a crew member. As you know, Jay, the credits are so long in today's movies, and they weren't so much back then, except Superman, Star Wars, some of those were an exception. They did have a lot of credits. But Nicholas, I'm convinced he definitely was one of the babies. There were multiple babies, because anytime you film with babies or toddlers, you've got to have backups because they might get fussy or start crying. So Nicholas is actually the first baby that we see. And then the first close-up of the baby, it switches to Lee Quigley. So you need to watch that really closely. Of course, a lot of us know that as Superman is traveling through space, the baby gets older. And that's actually two different babies. That's Lee Quigley and a girl named Elizabeth Sweetman. And, of course, she wasn't credited because they didn't want anybody to know it was a girl.
Yeah.
If you go to Internet Movie Database and type in Superman the movie and start scrolling down, there are a ton of uncredited people. And over the past couple of years, some people have been added, including the guy who played the arm of the mugger in the alley. He's in some of my continuity Polaroids and in some of my contact sheets. And he just did that part, the arm. So by the time they go into the alley, you actually are in Pinewood Studios backlot months later. So they went from the summer of New York City to the winter of England. So that's movie magic for you.
Jim, when you think about all the continuity photos you have, the behind-the-scenes photos that you have, and so many of them are up at CapedWonder.com, if you had to look at Superman the movie and go through in your mind every scene, what portion of that film do you wish you had more of?
Well, the first set of photos, and I do have what I call the Superman photo holes or gaps. You know, I've got a lot of Bob Penn set photography. Bob Penn was the principal set photographer. One of the holes I have, the promotional pictures by the water in New York and on the roof of the Mayflower Hotel. Now, we all know there's a lot of photos from those sessions, but there are a number of outtakes that I still haven't found yet, and I know that Bob Penn must have shot a ton of photos during that. So that's one of the gaps. The close-ups of Chris Reeve with a bus. I have mainly the Derek Meddings miniature photographs. If you watch the movie again, by the way, and you see the long shot of Superman flying up to the bus, that's actually the magic of Derek Meddings. And I know many of you know that name. He's done The Spy Who Loved Me. He did the last film he did, I think, was GoldenEye with Pierce Brosnan. And that's actually a little miniature Superman on a wire being hoisted up to a little miniature bus on a miniature Golden Gate Bridge. And then it cuts to a full-size close-up of Chris. And what's interesting is, from what I understand from talking to people that are at Pinewood, if you were there when Superman was filming, of course, you had the 007 soundstage, which is still to this day a gigantic building. And that's where they built the Fortress of Solitude exterior scenes and the Arctic scenes. Then outside right next to it would have been a portion of the Daily Planet building with a helicopter, full size, suspended off the side of it. And then next to that, a piece of the Golden Gate Bridge with a real bus on it.
Yeah.
So imagine that. They would just move the cranes over. They'd go, okay, Chris, we got a little problem over here. Why don't you go over there now and keep filming the bus? Okay, you're done with that. We're ready for you over here. Let's do some more helicopter shots. I don't have a whole lot of exterior behind the scenes photographs that just kind of back up and show you all those different set pieces outside, because that's not stuff that set photographers were hired to do as much. They were hired to be right there shooting close-ups of you know, the cast and crew. And that's why my quest for finding more photos, you and I have both done that.
Sure.
Will be ongoing, I think, for many years, because Speaking of that, we're going to be premiering some unseen rare photography shot by a crew member on the Fortress of Solitude set when we do our Superman 2 panel at Motor City. We're excited to show you those.
I thought it would be fun to wrap things up today with a letter, a memo, if you will, written by Richard Donner that we obtained just a couple of years ago. But boy, it's it really just takes you back to what was going on when they were making this movie.
And I'm sure Richard Donner wrote many letters to his cast and crew because he was so caring and passionate and positive about this whole production, despite all the obstacles he was faced with. But it's dated 5th April 1978. That's how it's written. So it tells you it was written by an American, not someone from the UK, because it would have been the other way around. It would have been, you know, they reversed the month and the date. But anyway, it says, to all members of the Superman unit, from Richard Donner, reference publicity. This is classic Richard Donner for you. I love you all. Everything is going super. The gimmicks are totally ours, so please notify me if anybody from any publication, newspaper, or magazine wants to do any pictures or interviews. I'll be only too happy to help them, but please clear it with me before anything is given out. And here's my favorite part, Jay. The magic is still ours. Let's keep it that way. Thanks.
It's great.
Don't you love that? Isn't that great? The magic is still ours. I love it. And, you know, he'd been filming for a whole year by the time he wrote this.
And basically, of course, alluding to the fact that they knew what kind of gold they had when they were looking at those dailies and looking at what they had shot, and the rest of the world kind of clueless of what was going on other than they were making a Superman film. And yeah, let's keep those secrets close.
Oh yeah. And they did. They did a great job of that. And I think that's why the film worked so well, is we didn't know. It really wasn't until January of 1979 when I picked up the American Cinematographer magazine, and it's a fascinating issue that covers the making of Superman the movie. And then later in the year, the September issue did even more. So I love all of that, but I'm so glad I didn't see or hear about any of it before the movie came out.
Well, and, you know, Richard Donner in that email, talks about, you know, still holding on to the magic, but that magic paid off. I wish it would have paid off in about 10 other awards, but it did well at the 51st Academy Awards back in 1979.
Right. It's been already 40 years, Jay. On April 9th, 1979, Steve Martin presented the Special Achievement for Visual Effects Award to Superman the movie. One of the recipients had already passed away, Les Bowie, by the time that award was given. He was the guy who did all of the beautiful matte paintings and was responsible for so many of the opticals and visual effects that we enjoy in those films. And then Dennis Koop, Derek Meddings, Zoran Perisic, that name may seem familiar. He's the guy who invented the front projection Zoptic flying equipment. And a little piece of trivia. Here we go again. Dennis Koop, who was one of the recipients of the Oscar, he actually has a little Easter egg, if you will, in Superman the movie. And it is the scene where Superman takes off from Lois Lane after rescuing her from the helicopter crash. And he's flying. Remember, the city is upside down, Jay, behind him as he's flying and somersaulting. And it's so beautiful. And the lighting is changing on him. And just as he banks off camera, you'll look on the right side and you'll see in blue neon a Hotel Coop.
Yes.
And that's a little tribute to Dennis Koop, because he was in charge of all of the flying equipment to make this such a convincing film. So I love that kind of stuff. So look for that if you've never noticed it before. It was a little miniature sign that they put in there.
Yeah, I kind of wish I had met you many years ago, Jim, because I can't tell you how many times I've been to New York looking for the Hotel Coop, which doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist. But you know what we're going to have to do in a future podcast is talk about the background plates, both still plates and filmed plates that were shot in New York, Jay, because they did a ton of scouting in late 76, early 77 on where they were going to film. And then, of course, these optical guys went in and shot a lot of large format 8x10 plates from different buildings, as well as shot a lot of aerial footage for the flying and all of that. So we need to talk about what we actually see in those plates sometime, including on Lois's terrace. You see some interesting things behind her.
You know, the great Rex Reed on this podcast asked, how could we possibly do a podcast so often on just one movie? And this is the proof. We always have more to talk about.
Always. And, you know, we're just barely touching it. It always keeps coming our way, new stuff. And we're learning from the fans. We're learning from some of these materials that are coming up on the auction block and on eBay or whatever you find. And I love how people want to share. And so it's a constant learning process. And that's just on the Donner years. You know, now we're starting to venture into the Richard Lester years with Superman II. Of course, Richard Lester directed Superman III. And then we have Superman IV, which is a really fascinating production that we'll be talking about. And we hope to have Martin Lakin, probably the biggest Superman IV fan on the planet, who's going to come join us and talk about costumes and all kinds of stuff. So it is never ending, isn't it, Jay?
Never ending. Unfortunately, this podcast has come to an end, and that is all the time we have for today. We'll be back again soon with another Caped Wonder Superman podcast. As always, if you have ideas, questions, comments, we'd love to hear from you. It's easy to do that. You go to the Caped Wonder Superman podcast Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, the be-all and end-all when it comes to this film series is CapedWonder.com. Best website you can ever go to for all of this. And of course, that's all Jim Bauer. So that said, Jim, have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Jay. I had a really great time today.
And thank you to Hadley, who, by the way, was the voice of our show open today, which we did not reveal until now. So if you've been through this entire hour, now you know that that was Hadley at the very start of our show today. So thank you to Hadley. We look forward to seeing you at the Caped Wonder Superman podcast booth at the Motor City Comic Con in May. Thanks, Jim. See you soon.
Thanks, Jay. Everybody stay super. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Caped Wonder Superman podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Jay Towers is a Detroit TV anchor and morning radio host on 100.3 WNIC Detroit. Follow Jay on Instagram and Twitter at Jay Towers. Jim Bowers is the founder and editor of CapedWonder.com, the home of Caped Wonder Superman imagery. Follow Jim on Instagram at Caped Wonder and on Twitter at Caped Wonder Jim.